Test, test, test. Level. Excuse me. Level check. You good?
XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Monday morning here on At the Races, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online at our website, stevebick.com. And there's so many things I'd love to do here to, you know, kind of bust out and you know, celebrate. We're going to do some celebrating as the morning unfolds, the celebrating of the life of Howie Tesher. That celebration's one thing, and you know, Howie lived a full and rich life, and you'll, for those that don't know him and you know, don't have a, you know, an intimate connection, maybe came to the game in recent years after Howie had already retired, but as vibrant and as just wonderful a human being, first and foremost, and then outstanding horseman, which went part and parcel with him and his personality. It even at 87, it feels like, you know, a heartbreaking end of a amazing life. I wondered on Saturday morning, and it took me until this morning to get out there and say anything online. A huge privilege to get to know Howie through the trips to Florida and through people like John Parada and Aaron Yagoda and JJ, you know, going over to Calder. Howie last appeared on the show in 2016, and the fall that he took 5 years ago, I think, it hit his head severely, and it was the beginning, really, of the end. I mean, there was no expectation. I mean, if he hadn't had that incident, he could have gone on and enjoyed probably many more years. If I open the phone lines, we'd have, I mean, literally, I could go all this week. I mean, we could go 5 days. I mean, especially with me going down to Florida tomorrow for Eclipse and the Sam Davis the week after. The lives that he touched, you'd be astounded. You're going to be just amazed. And, you know, when trying to, I know why it was difficult to really. You know, sometimes things come flowing out, and it's easy to put words together when you lose people like Howie Tescher, and you know, in a lot of ways, Howie the East Coast Barry Abrams, very, very similar. Individuals that just have a legacy of care and concern and thoughtfulness and just touching lives in countless ways. I'm gonna the lineup that you're gonna hear from, and I'm gonna try to weave everything else in for the start of a week. We have a tragedy to talk about here in the first 15 minutes. That is, as sad as the situation for to lose Howie, the situation involving Daniel Quintero is mind numbing. 19-year-old exercise rider killed in a training accident on Saturday at Tampa, and just agonizing, and I mean, right in the wake of these kinds of conversations that we had in recent weeks. I mean, it just with Tony and Rich just shows you. I mean, the clock is ticking at all times for riders, and then there's the counterbalance to a life like Howie's that had basically 87 years and a good 55 of them, more, 50, almost 60. Yeah, 60. He was in his 20s when he committed full time to the racetrack. So, and only really stopped, less than 10 years ago. So, six decades on the racetrack. We'll hear from Aaron Yagoda first, and the names that came to mind that just fell into place as I kind of reached out you'll hear the stories. I mean, the beauty of paying tribute to Howie Tescher is that it's completely easy. There's the horses first and foremost, and the success on the racetrack, and the dozen or so grade ones. That's just part of it. Probably 50 plus graded stakes and countless. It's funny. The only one, like, I don't know, I think I saw 1,400, 1,500 races total. But when you start to talk about the horses and the kinds of races that Howie won as a trainer and the clients, that's part of this that is just unbelievable. And I tried to pull from a Chinese menu of people that had close ties to Howie Tescher, and Aaron Yagoda first and foremost. And Aaron looked after Howie, not just recently, but for years and years, and he'll have as great a set of stories as anyone. And there's a unbelievable, an only in racing coincidence, a magical tie from the weekend to Howie and Aaron, because Neil Pessin sent out Happy American to that win Saturday in the Louisiana. We got plenty of the race results to discuss. Only in our game can you make this kind of a connection where Our friend David Miller in Minnesota. David is poking around looking at Happy American, who, you know, wins another stake and for the Lothenbachs and Pessin, and notes that the dam, Queen of America, was out at Our Dear Ruth, that Harry Mangorian bred, but that Howie and Aaron Yagoda together campaigned. It's the script writes itself. It's amazing. Just amazing. That comes, you know, less than 24 hours after, you know, word comes that Howie had passed. Adam Wachtel is going to join us, and Adam and his father, Edwin Wachtel, the Wachtels associated with Howie for years and years and years. And Adam's got countless stories about Howie and their horses, and just, you know, the time together. Rich Migliori, with his regular Monday visit, rode many good horses for Howie. And if I reach out on jock front, and there isn't a prominent rider, and not so prominent, but, you know, going back to the 70s, I mean, he gave jocks that were up-and-coming chances, jocks that were struggling chances, jocks coming back from injury chances. His generosity and his thoughtfulness is just, you know, part and parcel. He trained a lot of trainers and people that came through the barn. Steve Margolis worked for Howie for 7 or 8 years. Pat Byrne and Jill, and from a quote I saw, I think, from somewhere from Pat Byrne, not after the passing, but in some other, I was looking at some other article, and I guess Pat and Jill met while working for Howie. But Margot is going to join us and talk about running the shed, being a top assistant those years. Dave Granick. Dave, when he started to cover Jersey and New York, Howie as prominent, you know, as anybody. And, you know, when you're an up-and-coming journalist, and you know, Howie himself, who went to the University of Florida, he was a journalism major. So in terms of communication and affability and you know, the just being effusive, and I mean, he made great copy. He was a natural. He was a natural. And so, you know, undoubtedly young, you know, young up-and-coming turf riders, Howie was great copy. So Dave will talk about it. Steve Askin is going to join us in hour three. And I promise I won't mention the Cowboys much. I think Dave Joseph, and of course we'll see Dave starting Wednesday at Gulfstream. We'll get to the Pegasus draw and big, wonderful card, actually. 13, as expected, 13 race card set for Saturday at Gulfstream. Tom Ventura, again, the ties to the news of the day, in addition to Howie, is that OBS January starts tomorrow. Where's my catalog? There it is. Winter mix sale starts tomorrow at OBS. They're running the tack, the under tack, so, which just started literally 10 minutes here ago. So Tom will try to tie in with when Tom was working for Kinsman, for George Steinbrenner. I mentioned how many owners, the kinds of owners that Howie Tesher attracted. George Steinbrenner. how about that? Telly Savalas. He trained for Telly. You know, maybe Howie, I mean, as great a success as Howie had, he would have been great in any year, actually. I'm just thinking about saying, you know, in terms of, you know, he was good looking and, you know, could really chat up in front of the camera. So there's a good portion of who we're going to hear from. And as I said, if I open up or if I just start reaching out to some of the people that, you know, Jerry Bailey rode, you know, one of his last big horses, an influent Angel. I could reach out to Angel for sure. Joe Allen, I thought to call. Joe Allen, another one of his big owners. For somebody that, you know, that didn't necessarily have the influence of, let's say, or the, you know, the Hall of Fame kind of credentials. As I wrote this morning, Howie Tesher had an outsized influence on owners and on the game at large, and, you know, in the game's history, in terms of the people that he touched, and, you know, there's parts of this. And in fact, let me reach for Aaron. It's perfect timing. The folklore of the second half of the 20th century that I guess we romanticize with good reason in terms of romanticizing it. But, you know, the stories you hear about Harvey's office at Belmont and the collection of racetrack characters that hung out there, all of the charm and magic that we like to attach to the game can really be personified with Howie Tesher. Aaron Yagoda joins us to start the parade of tributes. And Aaron, knowing just how much you cared about him and how you looked after him these years, I try to speak for everybody around the game and telling you how sorry we are to lose Howie like this.
Yeah, Howie was amazing. He was like a second father to me. And, you know, Howie made everything fun. I mean, if you said you want to go get some gas in your car, that would be the greatest gas experience you ever had. Wherever we went, I mean, he just, you know, if he drove you home from Aqueduct, he'd make you stop at the hot dog stand outside the cemetery for the greatest hot dog, which I was always a little nervous where the guy got his ingredients. And no matter what you did with Howie, it was just a lot of fun. I mean, I have some stories I don't know if you want me to tell about, you know, the time he wanted to moonlight a horse at Belmont. But that's okay to tell.
Of course.
We both live in the city, and he calls me up one morning. He's like, listen, I want to cash a bet. And Howie really was a lot smarter than people thought, and he had a really great opinion as a gambler, and he really did that. He had a different persona. You know, people had a different persona of him, but he really was really sharp that way. So he calls me up and goes, listen, we need to moonlight this horse, so I'm going to pick you up. He picks me up outside my apartment. We go to the track. I'm like, Howie, it's pitch dark. It was like 4:30 in the morning. The track was opening at like 5 at the time. And he's like, this is what we do. We have two stopwatches. We hit him at the same time. And when the horse goes past him on the backside, he'll stop it. He'll hit his watch. And when he comes past me at the wire, I'll hit mine. And if we subtract it, we'll get the time of the workout. I'm like, that's genius, right? I said, but how am I going to know when this horse starts its work? It's pitch dark. He said, I'll flash my flashlights a few times. So the horse goes, he flashed the workout reports, and there would be little comments underneath. And the clocker must have been upstairs and said, Howie Tesher horse works 58-4 under the lights. We never gave him the name of the horse. We gave him a... And then Howie, you know, because he had Joe Allen and he always had Hash and these kind of guys around him. When I became, I said, you know, Howie, I like to claim. He's like, oh, I haven't claimed the horse in years. You know, what do we need to do? I said, it's not that difficult. Name on the slip. Price, race, trainer. We got this. So we go to, there was a horse running at Saratoga. And I said, the only problem is, Howie, this horse is off a layoff. And I'm a little nervous. We got to go look at it. He's like, I don't really know what I'm looking at. So I have a better idea. Antley was riding the horse. He says, I'm friends with Antley. I'll go ask Antley before he gets to the paddock to ask the trainer if the horse is live and to give us a signal if the horse is live, he'll hit his helmet. So we're going to just watch Antley. So Antley goes in the paddock. He talks to this trainer. The horse shipped in, so it was some out-of-towner. And Antley taps his helmet. So then Howie signals the person we had, because back then the claim box was all the way by where the jocks room was then, so you couldn't really make it. We signal someone else to drop the slip. So now it's like 8 minutes during the post parade. Howie's like, well, we got to bet on this horse. I'm like, Howie, I don't like the bet. He goes, no, but Antley said the horse is live. You like the horse. Let's do that. So we don't have any cash between us. So he has a great idea, Howie. We're going to go to the horseman's bookkeeper, grab a check out of our account, cash the check and bet the horse. I said, you could do that, but I'm not in for it. So he did that. He bet like $4,000 to win. The horse wins. We get the horse. Where's Howie? At the window. That's all he cared about was collecting this bet. So we're walking out of the track, and this little girl comes up to us. Oh, Mr. Tesher, you claim my horse. I don't know if she was the assistant trainer or maybe the owner or something like that. It was my favorite horse. How could you do this to me, Mr. Tesher? And Howie looks right at her and goes, it was him. He wanted to take it. I didn't want to claim this horse. It was his whole idea. So that was my thing. But Howie was famous for a lot of other things. Like, this wasn't my horse, luckily, but he had a horse that got loose on the Cross Island Parkway. Do you know about that?
Jeez, no.
Oh, Howie had a horse, like, in the early 90s, and it finished training, and it was coming back from the track, and Howie's barn was barn 17, which is, like, three barns in or two barns in from the stable gate at gate 6. So getting back, the horse gets loose, runs right past his barn, makes a right onto Hempstead Turnpike, down Hempstead Turnpike, and makes a left onto the on-ramp of the Cross Island Parkway.
Heading north?
No, heading south, like he was going to Aqueduct. So they turn the horse around somehow. They stop traffic. It's on the local news, and now the horse runs back, and they grab the horse, and that night I speak to Howie. I'm like, Howie, that was crazy. He goes, yeah, you know, the horse can't be much. He barely got hurt. He only had a few stitches and a little road rash, so he can't be any good. And he goes, I said, but I'm perplexed. I said, why are you perplexed, Howie? He's like, do you know how long that was on my – I'm trying to fill out my training chart, and I don't want to know exactly how far this horse went. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, women loved Howie. No one ever knew his age. Wherever he went, he would never tell anyone his age, except for his friend Steve Silver. Steve Silver, if they asked Howie, what's Howie's age, Steve Silver would always say, he's 10 years older than me. So then you had to figure out what Steve Silver's age is. But he had this, except for Google. When Google came out, one of his girlfriends found out his age, and then I don't know if she broke up with him, but he lied about it. So on his driver's license, he would have the year, you know, rubbed out. And on his badge at the track, he'd have his year rubbed out. So everyone had a different year of when he was born. But
well, it's funny you say that, because Bill Hirsch sent out, as always, Bill keeping the circle of friends informed, and sent out a thing on Saturday and said Howie is gone. And something, you know, he wrote a small obit and said 90. And so that was really the first written notice I saw. And then later on, Dave Joseph, and I reached out to Dave Joseph, and Dave, I think Dave then turned around for the Gulfstream notes and was writing something. And so he said, how old was Howie? And so I wrote back. I said, 90. Bill Hirsch had it. And then hours later, I saw on all the online obits, 87. So
well, I went to the source yesterday. I went to Steve Silver with the Steve Silver plus 10. Steve's 80. So we're going to go with 90.
So 90 is correct. I had a feeling that Bill Hirsch was going to be correct.
Yeah, he didn't like to tell anybody. He was rubbed out everywhere, on every license. Even the Gaming Commission came to his office one day and said, can we see your license? We're having a discrepancy. His birthday was June 14th, Flag Day, but no one had the year right. He had 1935, 1932, 1940. He just kept changing the years at the end.
You know, speaking of, we'll come back to the racetrack because some, you know, I've already noted this morning the unbelievable coincidence the only racing could produce, with Happy American winning on Saturday. We'll get to that, but in terms of his heritage and background, because he was a South Florida institution. But his two brothers, I met one of the brothers. And
yeah, he had two brothers, Freddie and Bobby. They were both dentists. Howie couldn't pass chemistry at University of Florida, which I think he went on a basketball scholarship. Howie's a great athlete. He's a great tennis player, handsome guy, always put together well. So he couldn't pass it. But I believe that he told me the story where, you know, his brothers really liked him. They were really close. He was really close to his brothers. And do you know about the dentist with the monkey?
No.
No, yes. Oh, so Howie had this great idea. Back then, dentists and doctors couldn't advertise on TV, but Howie decided they get some kind of story about this thing. So Howie had a friend with a monkey with an impacted tooth, and they were going to, pull this monkey's tooth on TV. And when they gave the monkey the Novocaine, something happened, and the thing went crazy and trashed the whole office on TV. And his brothers got in all kinds of trouble for advertising or whatever. But that was Howie. I think after that, they gave Howie money not to show up at the dentist's office.
Well,
one of his older friends might know about the dentist with the monkey, but that's what the story I was told.
Well, because his one brother, when I started coming to Calder in the aughts, his brother was always at the barn.
Yeah, that was Bobby.
Bobby.
Right, Freddie died earlier.
Well,
yeah, he really liked it. But I mean, Howie was just, and he was always the greatest prankster. I mean, he just did. And we had a horse together, Baron DeVoe, who we bought later in his life.
Sure.
And, but we didn't have him when he was really good. And he had these two girls call me up that they were the founding members of the Baron DeVoe fan club. And it had me go collect a shoe, an old wind picture, a program. It was all Howie putting these two girls up to it. And he had me, he's like, these girls are really hot. You should definitely do this. And he had me going for like days trying to get all this stuff. And then I remember one day I brought her, I was dating a girl, I was coming out to Howie's barn, I had like four or five horses there, and I was like, Howie, listen, I like this girl, please don't prank me today, you know? And when I got to the barn, not only did he switch all my horses in their stalls, he switched their halters, he had everybody in the barn in on this, and he turns to the girl and goes, he doesn't even know which one of his horses are, why would you want to date this guy? So... That was Howie.
Well, and we should include the bizarre tie-in that he was allergic to horses.
Oh yeah, yeah. But he was a good horseman. He really knew how to set one up when he really wanted to. He didn't put the effort in on a day-to-day basis, but he really loved putovers. He used to have a friend, I forgot the friend's name, was a great gambler, and he had also had his friend Dick Cumble, but there was another guy that he was named Harvey. I couldn't remember the other guy's name. And these guys were great handicappers, and he really loved setting something up. But, you know, also Howie was a great intuition of people. Like, I'm friendly with Dr. Alday only because of Howie. He was at Saratoga, and he pointed Dr. Alday out to me one day and goes, you know what, go befriend that guy. That guy's one of the smartest guys you'll ever meet in the game. And that's how I started my relationship with Dr. Alday, because Howie told me to go befriend him.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then he always had a cast of characters around him, like Hash. And all that. But he was the biggest fan of Alan Jerkins. Howie thought Alan Jerkins should be the only one training horses. He used to tell me that all the time.
Well, there's so much wonderful, so many wonderful things written. And because Howie made such good copy. I mean, he was a natural for the turf riders to approach. And I did see a piece that talked about that he explained about when he first got to New York and looked up to Alan, and he approached Alan early on and wanted to ask him about, you know, what do you think I should do with this horse? What do you think of that horse? And Alan, of course, you know, gruff at first. Well, how the hell do I know? What do I know from your horses?
Right, exactly. You know, some of my greatest mornings were at Gulfstream. After training, Howie would sit outside his barn and have bagels or whatever he had, and Alan Jerkins would come by and Hash, and they would just tell stories, and I would just sit there and soaking them in. It was just amazing. Really, really was.
Well, I mentioned...
Wait, can I tell you a funny Yom Kippur story about Howie?
Sure. That's what you're here for.
It was Yom Kippur. Howie calls me up. He says, I got a horse running. I said, Howie, listen, you know, my parents really don't want me to go to the races. They're both gone already. They don't really want me to go to the races on Yom Kippur. He goes, oh, I made the same promise to my mom that I won't go either. I said, so why are we going, Howie? Well, I can't tell that to my owner. We need to go. But don't worry. We're not going to go to the paddock. No one's going to know. I have a great idea. So we go to Belmont. The horse running at Belmont, maybe it's a 7-furlong race, and we drive to the backstretch where the trees are, and we park and we watch. We go through the trees, and we're standing there along the back rail of the trees, and I was like, no one could see us here. The horse breaks from the gate, takes about 4 steps and pulls up. He goes, you think God saw us? And then I said, should we go back to the barn? He's like, no, we'll just worry about that tomorrow. Let's go home. We're having a bad day. So that was my Yom Kippur story with Howie. And I don't think I've been to the track on Yom Kippur since. But he was always in Harvey Pack's office. That's how I started hanging out in Harvey's office. We would spend the whole day there at Aqueduct sitting in his office, and it was just great, great times. I mean, if you knew Howie, you loved Howie. You know, if anyone gets on here and says a bad story about Howie, they're lying. I mean, he put you in some bad spots at times with some people. He put me in some bad spots with people with, you know, at times. But he would say, you know, I'm just trying to make it tougher. Don't worry about it, pal. Like the claim and some other situations.
Did you realize Saturday when the Happy American with the and being. You know, the second dam, our dear Ruth and our friend David Miller, he sent me a note. He said, Howie Tesher, you know, trained the second dam of Happy American. And then when I went to go look at Happy American, there you are. And looks like Howie bought her for $80,000 for you guys.
Actually, Tom McGreevy bought. That was one of my bad spots. And we were pinhooking her. And then we bought her for $50,000 privately from my group. And that turned into a whole nightmare with Howie. It became a whole. That was one of my bad situations. And we needed to get this horse sold. So I wanted to get my grandfather back in the game. So I figured if I named the horse for my grandmother who just passed away, on my grandfather's wall, he had this old mare, Our Dear Ruth. So I said, let's just name it Our Dear Ruth. My grandfather will buy half the horse, and we'll be fine. We'll get out and all that. So that's how we came, Our Dear Ruth. So now Howie wants to cash a bet on her, too. So we put her in for 50 first time out, and she won by 7. And on the TV show that night, Harvey Pack says, well, the Matzo boys won, and luckily this one didn't get claimed, and that's all my grandfather heard. We were in a claiming race? I didn't even know that, and he wouldn't speak to me for days or hours. And then she landed up being, we landed up selling her to the Thoroughbred Club, the guy who died.
Simon.
Yeah, Simon. And she landed up being, she became a good producer. She had a very good family. She was like an old Mangurian family with Manny
exactly.
And all those horses in there.
Yep, it was a Harry Mangurian bred Mockingbird Farm.
Yeah, Mockingbird Farm, yeah. I think she was a Balski, if I remember correctly.
Well, and what's funny is one of her unsuccessful foals is the dam of Happy American. She was a two-time winless starter, Queen of America, and the Bobby Barnett trained and must have gotten hurt. And here she is having produced Happy American for Bob Lothenbach.
Well, good timing. Maybe Howie had something to do with that one.
Well, that's what's so amazing. I mean, here it is. You know, hours later, and I thank David Miller, you know, who's a top pedigree advisor and breeding bloodstock advisor, for that tip. And then I of course was stunned when I saw that it was your horse.
Yeah, no, Howie was amazing. You know, about a year and a half ago, I went to see him with Steve Silver. He was at the facility where he passed away from, and I bought an old blood horse article. It was a blood horse article on Joe Allen, and there was pictures of Howie in there, and I showed him, and he's like, who's that handsome guy? And I was like, Howie, that was you. And he started showing all the nurses, and then he was really happy then. He was still happy Howie Vane, you know. He was in a wheelchair, but he wouldn't let anyone push him. He'd move it around with his feet by himself, so you know. But I remember I got my car and I cried, and I thought maybe that'd be the last time I saw him, and it was. So you know, but I had nothing but great memories. He was like a, you know, he never had children of his own, and he treated me like a son, and it was amazing times. And I can't wait to hear the rest of today's tribute to him.
Well, and there's you know, there's so many different angles here, and Adam Wachtel is going to join us in about 5 or 6 minutes.
You know, that's another person I met because of Howie was Mr. Wachtel and Adam.
Well, and of course Edwin Wachtel. You know, they had the longest association. I mean, from your vantage point, Aaron, because you go back, you know, that it's got to go back to the late 80s, early 90s. So, you know, he won 1,300 races, and it does feel like you know, with the client list that he had, that he could have gotten bigger if he had wanted to. And you know, he obviously trained people that came up under him. It, you know, it feels like he you know, could have had a bigger operation. But
yeah, you know what I always said to him, that he would have been a great California trainer with his looks and his personality.
Yeah.
He would have had every movie star training. I mean, he trained for, you know, important people too, like, you know, George Steinbrenner and Tom Savalas and Mr. Wachtel and a lot of famous people. But he would have been a great California trainer. But he loved Florida and he never really wanted to be big. You know, he started out working for Winnick. And I don't know if he even started out in the barn. He used to tell me he used to get paid to go out to dinner and promote clients for Winnick. That's how he got started. So I think he started training at night. And then he had his friend Dick Cumble, and they had this turf and paddock, some public company, and they couldn't race in New York, and they landed up in Chicago. And everywhere you go, you know, I used to go to Wolfie's Rascal House in South Florida. His picture was the Wolfie Rascal that he ran in the Derby.
Of course.
It was plastered all over the wall. Wherever you went, you just had a great, great Howie story. I got a couple of Howie women stories, but that's definitely not for today. Or definitely not for the air.
You can't really go wrong, actually, with on this show.
He was great. I have nothing but great memories. Just great times with him.
Well, and you know, you helped to be a conduit for me too, and I started having him on the show, and I'm going to have for Casey to see if we can't find a couple of the conversations. The last one was in 2016, and you know, I would just prompt him a little bit and just let him tell stories, and you know, after a while he'd start to get a little tired, right, there was that one visit that went for like an hour and 15 minutes.
I'd love to hear that.
There was a nice horse that came. It's got to be about 2010, 11, 12 in that range, you know, near the end of his career. And he had, you know, he always had a good horse around.
He did. You know, if you look at his career, he trained a lot of really good horses. I mean, people don't remember because they weren't like bam, bam, bam. But like when I first started getting into racing more and more in the 80s, it seemed like he won every feature race, whether it was Pumpkin Moonshine or Plankton or Weber City Miss and all these great horses that he had for Joe Allen. Every week they would seem like they would win the feature in New York.
Well, and he came, you know, for those that haven't seen, maybe at some point today you'll see it on Twitter, and I'll probably put it on Facebook. I found a picture and a very funny story in an article by, I think it was by Art Grace in the Miami News. It feels like Art Grace, whenever he had a deadline and didn't have anything, he would just go to Howie. I have found literally 50 articles by Art Grace in the Miami News, the Racing Green section. And there's a very funny photograph. Apparently, John Brunetti, I think there was some frustration that Tap Shoes didn't win the Eclipse, that didn't win the two-year-old championship, despite the fact that he had won the Hopeful and the Futurity and I think a couple of other things. And so John Brunetti presented him with a Eclipse rock that they mounted in front of his barn. And the picture is you should see it. I linked you into the, you know, into the tweet. So you'll see it.
All right. I'm going to check it out. Yeah. And he won the Florida Derby with Bull in the Heather.
Right.
He won the Washington DC International.
Yep. You sure did.
Yeah, he really had some good horses and really had a lot of success with Joe Allen and amongst other guys. But he loved his Dolphins, Howie. He used to go on draft day. He used to go to with the Dolphins on draft day. Everything was Dolphins colors in his barn, and he was a big Dolphins fan.
Well, he historically, his colors were all tied to sports, including his high school colors originally, black and gold, and then there was another, before the Dolphins were even founded, or around the time the Dolphins were founded, that's when he switched, and he said he would keep those colors until Shula retired. And
he kept them after.
Yeah, he did. He did. he absolutely did. I know that that Richie, you know, Richie, Bolshoi Boy is a horse that Rich rode. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah, they won one of, like, the Cornhusker, one of those kind of races together.
Yep.
I don't know which one it was.
Yeah, in 87, they won the Razorback, the Cornhusker, the Canterbury Cup. Bolshoi Boy won the Illinois Derby. Lieutenant's Lark was the horse that won the D.C. International.
Oh, yes, right, right. On a rainy, miserable day. He really had a lot more success than people thought. I think he trained Darby Creek Road, and who was the other one that won? He trained Gatto del Sol.
That's right.
Not when he won the Derby.
No, later on. Later on, yeah.
Later on.
Absolutely. Stalwart member.
Stalwart member. That was a Wachtel horse.
We're going to talk with, in fact, we'll talk with Adam here shortly.
All right.
Aaron, thank you for this.
No, thank you for keeping Howie's tribute today and his memory, and everyone who knew him, like I said, loved him, and he was just a great guy and a great character of racing, and I wish we had more characters like him in the game.
Exactly.
I'll miss him. He was very important to me, and I'll always love him.
Aaron, you go to everybody, and I appreciate this. It's tough because I try to get Aaron on all the time, and he doesn't say no to this, but he says no the rest of the time. So,
well, thank you, Steve, for having me.
No.
And I'm looking forward to the rest of the show.
Thank you, Aaron. Aaron Yagoda, everybody. You can follow Aaron. Yagoda Aaron. And it's Aaron with one A. All the most important Jews in racing spelled their Aaron with one A. Aaron Wellman and Aaron Yagoda. For all your matzah needs. Aaron Yagoda and the Streitz family. Adam Wachtel is going to join us here, and I told Adam that I felt terrible. He's never been on with us, which is my fault. Easily identifiable that it's my fault that I haven't reached out to Adam, one of his partners.
Hi.
Hey, Adam. Adam Wachtel joins us. And I was just saying, Adam, that I feel terrible that this has to be the first time I have you on the show. Irresponsible part on me, but your family, you and your dad, so tied to Howie. And I'm like I told Aaron Yagoda, just saddened terribly to lose him.
Well, I feel that. I was part of a family that, and Aaron was part of that family too, that we're privileged enough to be around Howie for, in my case, for most of my life. I met Howie when I was, I guess probably about 10, 11 years old. And when my dad got his first horse. So I kind of grew up at the track with Howie, and he'd been there for family events. And I guess I got to credit him to piquing my interest in the sport along with my dad and teaching me, you know, a lot along the way. And man, we had a lot of good times together. He was a heck of a trainer and a fascinating man and kind of a rock star. he was really quite a presence around the track. I remember bringing once when I was in my early 20s, bringing a date to a race, and she's like, "My God, your trainer looks like Paul Newman." And I realized I probably shouldn't bring too many dates around Howie anymore because they were going to be more interested in hanging out with him than they were with me. But I have nothing but the fondest of memories of Howie Tescher and what a great guy he was, and he'll be missed.
What drew your father? You mentioned when your dad got into the game. What drew him to and got him connected originally with Howie? Do you recall?
Yeah, I think they had a common friend. I want to say it was a guy named Billy Goldsmith, who was my dad's business partner's brother. And Billy was an interesting character. I know he and Howie spent a lot of time together. I think that was the connection. And my dad grew up in Panama, actually. He was born in Europe, but they tried, his whole family could not get into the United States, so they wound up in Panama. And my dad used to sneak into the races as a kid, and he said, "Someday, if I can afford it, I'm going to buy a horse."
Hmm.
And so in the early 1970s, I was trying to think of the name of his first horse, and I couldn't do it. I recall getting a phone call. We were on a family vacation, and my dad got a phone call after he got his first win, which took about a year. And Howie felt so terrible. All the first horses he got didn't work out. And then finally it started to click. And we got a phone call. And my dad was so excited to get his first win. But he, that's how we kind of got started. So it was back in the early 1970s. I want to say his first state course that Howie had for him was a filly called Hinterland. It was probably, I don't know, 1973 or four. And my dad, from that point on, he was addicted. I mean, he just wanted to be a part of racing, and Howie really had a lot to do with that. My dad was very fond of Howie.
Well, and we should note, I mean, your father's involvement is more than just you know, the start of a nice nice pastime and activity. Your father was instrumental in some of the early foundation of the New York Bred program.
Yeah, I'm not even sure exactly who planted the seed with, we should do breeding, but it was Claremont who had we trained for my dad, who was a fantastic racehorse. When it was time to retire Claremont, my dad decided, you know what, why don't we try making a stallion out of him? And he actually was a heck of a stallion. And so he was introduced to a gentleman named Jim Edwards, who owned Keene Stud Farm and was one of the partners in, there was a group that had the Stallion Park, in Millbrook, and Keene Stud was in Amenia. And so that's how he got started there. And Claremont was there, and he started getting some mares and how he trained, the homebreds. And, how he trained a horse called Stalwart Member, which was a homebred Claremont. It was probably the best homebred my dad had. Just missed winning the Carter. And I actually probably when you reached out to me about this, I was trying to think of all the great times I had with Howie and all the memories of going to races with him. I was living in the city and I would go to his apartment and we'd go together to the races quite often. And the mornings I spent at the barn and he taught me, cause I knew nothing about, horses. I'm still not, I don't consider myself a horseman, but I know a little bit. But Howie taught me a lot. He educated me in the mornings, what's a stifle? What's a hock? And you point things out to me. And so I really got my education, from Howie. But being at the races with him was really, quite a thrill, especially on a big day. Aaron actually sent me a little video of when Champagne for Ashley won the Wood Memorial. Now, I didn't have anything to do with Champagne for Ashley other than I traveled with Howie to the races. And I believe it was Howard Cascal owned Champagne for Ashley. But I remember how excited he was about that horse. So the video that Aaron sent me, and I only saw it on my phone, he said, "I think that's you standing next to Howie." And I said, "Kind of looks like me. I mean, it's a long time ago." So all kinds of great stuff like that, being at the races. Whether it's winning a claiming race or a stake race, it was always exciting to be around Howie. He was kind of magnetic.
You also, you talk about those early years and formative years and, having a kind of a glitterati scenario, because your father was very friendly and brought Telly Savalas into the fold and how we trained for Telly, and also Jack Klugman. Jack, I don't know if did Howie train for Jack too?
I don't remember him training, but I remember being at the races as a kid with Telly. Telly and my dad were very close friends, used to come to our house, and Telly had a horse out in California that Howie didn't train called Telly's Pop. That was
right,
on the Derby Trail.
Of course.
And he was a hell of a horse, but I remember it was one of the great thrills of my life. And when I think about being at races, I'm pretty sure it was at Aqueduct, might have been at Belmont, but we went to the races and met Telly and Jack Klugman. I sat in a box with them. I'll never forget it because it was one of the first bets that I ever made with my dad. There was a stake that day, and the winner, and I'll remember this forever, was Shady Character was the name of the horse that won the big stake, and I had $2 on it, and it was this great thrill. And Telly and Jack congratulating me for my handicapping and coming up with Shady Character. And so that actually led to a couple years ago, I wrote a couple of articles for Blood Horse called Shady Character about some of the bad stuff taking place in our sport. But those are some of the glory days, back when there was a lot of celebrity around the track, and Howie fit right in. He was, like I said, he was kind of a rock star himself, so it was quite a group.
Mel Studi trained Telly's pop.
Oh, boy, I didn't even realize that. Yeah. Years later, I bought Smokin' Mel from Mel Studi.
Smokin' Mel! Oh, my God, yeah. That's right. Love yeah. Smokin' Mel.
Well, Mel Studi was a big smoker, and he named the horse after himself or whoever it was. So we brought him out from California. Yeah, I mean, Howie had this kind of following. I mean, I remember all the kind of the big hitters, you know, back then all wanted Howie to train for him. He had quite a posse of owners, you know, my dad included in that. I remember, you know, guys like Howard Cascal and Earl Mack and Steinbrenner used to use him. Yep. I mean, he had a lot of the important people in the sport were attracted to Howie because, you know, again, in addition to having the personality that he did and the presence that he had in the sport, he was also a hell of a trainer and had great results and had some really good horses. So he's a good guy to be associated with.
Well, and you had to, like Aaron, you had to have had plenty of fun the occasions, you know, after the races and away from the races as well. I mean, to especially down in South Florida. And boy, I wish that... I wish we could call Hank. Normally, Hank Goldberg would have been on the on the call list.
Yeah, he had, in addition, you know, I was more used to his New York crew, and I spent more time there. But when I was down in Florida, you know, again, Howie was a star down there as well. You know, going to the races, the memories that I have they just mean the world to me. A couple of my favorites, actually, were, one was at the Meadowlands. When I was a younger guy, my dad allowed me to name a horse after my grandfather, which he partnered with me on, called Gus's Memory. It was a homebred. And Howie knew it meant a lot to me. He wasn't a good horse. And he said, I'll tell you what, you want to go over to the Meadowlands with me? We're going to run this horse at the Meadowlands. We'll go win a race. I said, sure. And I brought my girlfriend at the time and met Howie over there. I think it was the last race. This must be like in the early 90s, maybe 90, 91. And Gus's Memory was running, maybe it was maiden claiming 8,000 or 10,000 or something like that. And he won by 4 or 5 lengths. And it was one of the, and Howie was jumping up and down. And I might as well have won, you know, a stake race that night, you know, just being there with him for a horse that, you know, when you have a homebred and you wait from the time they're born until they finally get to the races, it seems like it's forever. So they mean a lot. And that was one of those, you know, wins that, again, not a big deal. Maiden claimer, but it meant a lot, and I got to share that with Howie. But probably funny enough, I think the one memory, and I've shared this with a lot of people over the years, wasn't a good result, but it's just classic for me in my relationship with Howie. Was Stalwart Member was really a great horse, and early on in his career, I was approached by Howie. He said, you know, I have an owner that would like to buy Stalwart Member from you, and I own that horse with my dad. It was a present from my dad to me, and I have this on my desk, a picture of Stalwart Member with a note from my dad saying we're now partners. So I really didn't want to sell him, but I knew it was probably the right thing to do. So I talked to my dad about it and Howie, and we said, you know what, why don't we sell half? It was to Sid Port. I don't know if you remember Sid, but he was one of the great owners of the sport. Wonderful man from Chicago. And he said, I'd like to buy half the horse then if you won't sell me all of them. Can we run him in the Illinois Derby? And I said, Howie, what do you think? We hadn't gone that far. He said, I think you can handle it. So we, bottom line, I'll try to make this not too long.
It's all right.
We flew out to Chicago, Howie and I, and Stalwart Member was training Lights Out. He just won an allowance race at Aqueduct prior to that, but he was very impressive. And Howie said, this horse is training phenomenal, Adam. I said, great. Met Sid Port there, and, you know, he was a big deal in Chicago. And so the race goes off, and make a long story short, Stalwart Member finishes last, eased. And I'm, you know, I don't even know how to react. Howie's sick to his stomach. Sid Port was one of the great gentlemen. He comes up, puts his arm around me. He says, we're going to do just great with this horse. And I could barely look at the man. He just paid us a lot of money for half the horse, and he was eased. And so I get back in the car with Howie, and we could barely speak to each other. And I'm wearing my lucky tie, which Howie knew all about. They gave it to me at the trustees room at Belmont. Back then you had to wear a tie, and I forgot to bring one day. And they said, Mr. Wachtel, you need to put this tie on. I said, okay. They gave me the ugliest damn tie you've ever seen in your life. So the horse won. And I said, wow. And I'm very superstitious. So the next time I went to a big race, I wore that same tie, another winner. Third time, same thing. And it was with Stall Remember. So, you know, Howie knows about the lucky tie. And we're driving on the way to the races in Chicago. He said, I got to tell you, that is the ugliest damn tie I've ever seen. And I said, yeah, but it's lucky, Howie. So now we're driving back to the airport afterwards with our tail between our legs. And he looks at me and he looks at my tie. And I look at him and I look down at the tie. I handed him the tie and he threw it out the window on the highway at the end of the lucky tie.
So it's on the Dan Ryan.
It's somewhere in Chicago. And isn't that funny? All the good stuff. That's the story that I think about all the time, about the damn lucky tie that Howie threw out the window on the highway. So.
Well,
I will miss him very much.
And of course, Stalwart member went on to a wonderful career. I mean, won 15, 18 races. Had a tremendous career. I don't know how many times I saw him. And a son of Claremont.
Yep. That's what made it special when he almost won the Carter. I mean, he was home. I can't even remember who beat us. It was a Canadian-based horse. Langford, I think it was.
Wow.
Came and ran us down, and I thought we won a grade one for Howie. My dad never got to win a grade one. And that was, I think he was second like 20 times in grade ones. And I got my first grade one win when my dad was kind of sick and he wasn't able to attend a horse that I bought. It was Ron the Greek.
That's right.
But Stall Remember was one that Howie, from day one, he picked him out when he had an opportunity. John DeStefano and Howie used to started splitting up horses for my dad. And Howie got to Ocala before John did, and they were kind of dividing who gets what. And Howie said, I like this one. And from day one, he said, I think this horse is going to be special. And he really was. I mean, he won all kinds of graded stakes. I have a picture in my office of, I can't remember the name of the race, but Stalwart Member. It was me and Howie and Stalwart Member. And there was another horse. He won a graded stake in a dead heat. So Howie said, why don't we put both horses in the winner's circle at the same time? And I think it was Royal Haven or something like that.
Hmm.
It was one of the winter stakes at Aqueduct. And sure enough, so I have a picture of me and Howie, the other owner connections and the other trainer. I think it was Gaspar Machera maybe. And we're all standing together with the two horses in the winner's circle. It was kind of a neat experience. And it took forever for them to post the dead heat too. At least it felt like it was forever. And I was standing there with Howie the whole time. I think we got it.
I'd love that. That's a tremendous story. It's only once in a while that you see them do that, that somebody suggests and the other party agrees.
Yeah, it was actually Howie. You know, we were walking over and he said, I want to say it was Gaspar. I could be wrong, but he said, why don't we all take this picture together? And it's one of the coolest winner's circle pictures I have.
Oh, no,
I think it was maybe like the Gravesend or one of those kind of races. I'd have to go back in my office, take a look at the picture, but it's a classic.
I should get Adam to pull that out. That would be fun to put up. Adam, I so appreciate this, and as I said to Aaron, I couldn't do this, couldn't pay tribute, proper tribute to Howie Tesher without the Wachtels representing.
Well, I'm glad to be a part of it. Again, he's one of the great characters and individuals of our sport, and taught me a lot. And I think about him all the time, and he will definitely be missed, and I will have nothing but fond memories of Howie Tesher.
Adam Wachtel, and next visit we'll get you and Gary together and celebrate when your next big stake win.
That sounds good to me. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Adam. Adam Wachtel, everyone, and really an ideal visit following up with Aaron and ahead of the visit of Rich Migliori and Steve Margolis is going to be through, Dave Groening, and later Steve Shea, who people may know, who has done a million things around the game and a lifelong friend of Howie's. Hoping to hear from Dave Joseph and Tom Ventura. Steve Haskin in Hour 3 this morning as well. Overdue for a visit. How about them Cowboys? so I can't help myself. Sorry. We're paying tribute to the just unbelievable Howie Tesher, as wonderful a human being and horseman as his generation has produced. And as I've said a couple of times, it could open the phone lines and we would fill all 15 hours this week. Andy Serling tomorrow will undoubtedly pay his respects as well. And it's funny, I reached out to Gary to Siaka on Saturday morning. I said, you heard that Howie's gone? And he said, yeah, everybody was talking about it at Belmont. And Gary, I could have Gary and Bruce and everybody, the generation right behind Howie Tesher, he's the kind of guy that everybody was drawn to. That generation actually will be represented by Steve Margolis, who will join us after Mig, because Margo came up under him. So, a couple of other notes as we try to weave in some of the news from the weekend. As mentioned, Pegasus draw. We've got all week, obviously, to build up to that, and we'll be at Gulfstream for the next couple of weeks, starting on Wednesday. But Al Gold, a linchpin to a lot of things over the weekend, because Instant Coffee, terrific in the LeCompte. Wins the LeCompte, wins well. The two fills, I mean, I couldn't complain. I did not have a good day Saturday either. I got those maiden races. If I had just stuck mostly with the stakes, it would have been okay. But the maiden races were murder. A couple of good horses. How about Grant? Phil Bauer got a nice filly in this Mariah's Appeal. And Cassie, that determinedly, Asmussen, first defender. I did reach out.